Hello, I'm Cara Dahl Russell. On Saturday, December 8th, the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra will have its Christmas program, 7:30 p.m. at Salisbury University. For more information on the program or to get tickets, you can go online to salisbury.edu/SSO or call 410-543-6271. They will have a guest soloist tenor who's performing internationally, Dominic Armstrong. He studied at the Curtis Institute and Juilliard. He was a 2008 grand finalist with the Met Opera and a Filene Young Artist at Wolf Trap. It'll be a marvelous program of traditional Christmas works as well as opera works. And here today with me, I have Sachiho Morisugi, who is the principal violinist of the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra. Hi, Sachi.
Hi, Cara.
I'm so happy to have you here with me. Before we launch into anything else, I just thought, why don't you give me an encapsulated bio of your life with the violin?
Okay, sure. I started violin when I was 3 years old in Toronto, and I continued my studies through high school. And when I was about 16, I decided I wanted to pursue a career, a professional career in music. And so I went to Manhattan School of Music in New York to do my undergraduate. Eventually, I went to Mexico, where I had a position as concertmaster of an orchestra down there, and stayed there for 1 year, and then returned back to the States to continue my studies in my master's at Queens College. And then I did various freelance things, and then finally I ended up in New Orleans, where I was a member of the Louisiana Philharmonic. And then at that point, I decided I wanted to do something different, and I went to Tulane University and I did my MBA. Meanwhile, I was still playing, but not full time. And after that, I graduated. I actually moved to Nebraska, where they're in desperate need for a violin teacher at the university there. And that's when I became involved in teaching. And eventually I got my doctorate and came over here to Salisbury.
You mentioned starting at the age of 3. I'm always curious about how that starts. Was this you were gravitated to the violin, or was this something your parents that wanted you to do?
I guess it was a mutual decision, because that summer when I was 3, I went over, our whole family went over to Japan, and this was in the 60s when Suzuki violin technique was just taking off. And I remember watching TV and seeing a sea of young violinists playing. And my parents asked me if I wanted to play, and I said yes. And at that point, they got me one of those little violins that were probably only available, manufactured by the Suzuki factory over there. They got me an eighth size violin. And when we returned back to Canada, I began lessons then.
Now, you are currently, am I correct, principal violinist of the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra? Or concertmaster?
Principal is, there are several principal members in the orchestra. So my position would be called concertmaster.
And that's really the springboard of what I wanted to ask about. We hear these various phrases, concertmaster, principal violinist, first violin, leader. Can you break those down for me a little bit?
Okay. A principal is someone who is the leader of their section. So in a string section, we have a principal cello, a principal violist, a principal second violinist, and then myself, which would be the concertmaster, which is really the leader of all the principals. First violinist pertains to the entire first violin section, so that a member of the first violin section would be called a first violin. The leader is a term that is used in Europe for concertmaster. It basically is talking about the same position and is probably a little bit more diplomatic way of saying the same thing rather than concertmaster, which sounds quite forthright.
So I think I've heard there are some orchestras where particularly, if they have visiting conductors, that you hear a lot of the rehearsals might be led by the concertmaster, and then the guest conductor comes in for the final few.
It hasn't been my experience for that to happen. I know when I was in New Orleans, for example, we would have guest conductors, and they would rehearse all the rehearsals. Perhaps the assistant conductor may conduct the rehearsals, and then the guest conductor might come in. Now, it has happened to me in a concert before where the conductor, in the middle of the symphony, decided that he was too ill to continue, and he walked off stage. And in that case, the concertmaster of that orchestra did lead from his seat. And everybody, you know, all the wind players and all the string players had to watch him for, you know, the lead.
For those of you who are listening online, I spoke live with Sachi today on the air, and we had some trouble technically with that. And I asked her to come back, and she graciously agreed to come back to do this expanded interview online, which I'm happy about because we have now more information to talk about. One of the things we talked about is that just yesterday on All Things Considered, they did a story about a scientific experiment about whether a conductor really makes a difference with an orchestra, with lasers on the conductor's baton and lasers on the first violinist's bow. And they did come to the conclusion that a strong conductor makes a big difference, which I think a lot of us know. But there are now several prominent international groups that consider themselves leaderless groups. Have you been involved with something like that?
Not such a big group. Something like Orpheus Chamber Orchestra, for example, is quite large with winds included. And I know, because I know one of the musicians who does act as a leader, they do rotate. So it's not just one set, one leader all the time. But all the musicians are exceptional in that orchestra, and it's really more of a feeling of playing chamber music with a very large group.
Which you do both. You are with the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra, and as your husband happens to be the conductor, and I told you afterwards, having played with the orchestra, had I not known the two of you were married, I never would have known there was any relationship other than the professional relationship, which I think is perfect. That's the way it should be. But do you feel there's a particular difference in the interplay as the concertmaster with him than there would be, say, with another conductor?
Well, when I've played a concertmaster under different conductors, definitely it's more difficult to understand their gestures, their nuances, just because we haven't had the history that Jeff and I have had.
And we're talking about Dr. Jeffrey Shoyan, who is a cellist and also the conductor of the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra.
Yes. So I guess after playing with him for, you know, over 23 years, there's a lot that I can know without him actually, you know, saying anything.
You also play together in a chamber group, the Allegheny, is it quartet, trio? Depends on.
Right. We usually call it the ensemble.
And is there a specific difference in that interaction than within the chamber group as opposed to the orchestra?
Oh, definitely. In the orchestra, the conductor is the has a final word. He's on the very top of the hierarchy. Whereas in chamber music, we're all equal partners. And some people would say, well, it's a marriage between all the members. So there's a lot of give and take.
Now, with some chamber groups, they do still consider the violinist to be the leader. Is that the case in yours?
Well, the first violin part is often the most important, especially in quartets, and is the most prominent. But if you observe, you know, certain the dynamics of different quartets, such as the Juilliard Quartet, which I've observed, the first violinist is, it really is equal. And in that case, I think, you know, the cellist or the violist has a little bit more prominence in terms of what his ideas, mm-hmm. How persuasive he is.
Now, in addition to your playing with these various groups and with other chamber groups as well and other orchestras currently, you are also a teacher, and within the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra, you will often have several students in your section. How does that change the dynamic of your being the section leader?
Well, I feel like it's more of a, with the students, because we do have community players who are very competent. But with the students, I feel more of a mentoring relationship. I feel like in many cases, they need a little more guidance than a professional person would. And so I would help them with the fingerings and the bowings and just little details that in other cases, one would assume that the musician already knows. And I also meet with them outside of the rehearsal, so I can go over any issues that they and any issues or questions that they have as well.
Does that become part of their schoolwork then, or is that kind of separate from the schoolwork?
They can sign up for a course, but it's different than the symphony.
I know in playing the harp that ideally, of course, you're thinking about all things at all time. You're thinking about the notes and the precision and beauty of tone. I know, certainly with the violin, one thinks of the beautiful line, of the solo line of the violin. Do you find that in orchestral work, where does beauty of tone fall in that range of the concerns that you think about?
Well, in the orchestral part, we have to consider our role in the music itself. And, you know, a first violin often has a melody.
Yes.
But oftentimes it's an accompanying voice, in which case we have to just have another type of sound rather than, you know, one would in a soloistic sound and playing a melody. It can also be you can have a rhythmic function, in which case articulation is, and the rhythmic dynamic is most important, rather than, you still want to go for a nice
of
tone,
course, yeah.
You know, but considering just all the different functions that the line would play is something that we consider when we're just talking about sound.
Yeah. I mean, for those of you who are not musicians who are listening to this, this is really sort of an inside conversation in terms of ideally, in the ideal world, you have all these elements that work together. You have your precision and, of course, the notes and the rhythm and the beauty of tone. But we also know as we are working on pieces, especially during the rehearsal process, there are times when you're focusing more on beauty of tone at one point or rhythm at another point. And so thank you for that illumination of the violinist part of that. And speaking of soloists, I had the question, this program for the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra features a vocal soloist. So how does that change the hierarchy within the orchestra? Or does it? Does the soloist kind of supersede the conductor? Or
well, it's very interesting because it depends on the conductor. And I've seen like Isaac Perlman come into an orchestra and the conductor still feels like he has to, you know, tell him what to do. It mm-hmm. was, you know, in an embarrassing situation. But in fact, that's really how it should work, that the music director does guide, even in a soloistic solo mm-hmm. situation, the entire musical output. However, in our situation, we're always so fortunate that these wonderful musicians will come our way. And they've been so easy to work with, really, that we like to make the experience for them as positive as possible.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say it must somewhat have to do with the personality if you have a singer who's has a tremendous amount of clout and is a diva, that probably would make a great deal of difference with somebody who's coming with just an attitude of being a working musician with the ensemble.
Oh, definitely. And singers are, singers tend to be of the mind frame that instrumentalists are there to follow them.
Yes.
As opposed to, other violinists who are a little bit more accustomed to playing within a group.
Yeah. And I'm saying yes as someone who also has sung professionally. So I'm saying, I know as a singer, your concerns are just different. You have the music, but you're also thinking about performance. And a lot of times you just depend on the music to just be there because of the other concerns. Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned many of your students are in the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra. You also, I believe, are the head of the Presto program here. Can you tell me a little bit about what that program is?
Yes, the Presto program started, maybe we're in our second year right now. We offer individual instruction in strings, piano, and most orchestral and band instruments. And when I came to Salisbury, I didn't see that there was any place where young children or pre-college students could go to take lessons like you could in a major city, like, when I grew up. So I wanted to develop something that would give students the opportunity to get quality musical instruction in one location. I also thought that it was beneficial for the university to have the students come on campus, but also have their music education students have the opportunity to teach lessons. So
is this somewhat a teacher preparation program as well?
Yes. Well, right now we probably have about 13 instructors teaching, and of that, perhaps about 4 of them are student teachers. And this is, I think, a win-win situation because the students get the experience, and we do have like a tiered price for the incoming students who want to take instruction, whether they want to teach study with a student teacher or a professional teacher is what we call them, a person who has a bachelor's at least in music. I wanted to make it an instruction available to everybody, because I really believe that classical music instruction can be transformational. We do offer scholarship. It's a need-based scholarship. Lots of times I think classical music is restrictive, especially because lessons are very expensive. And
instruments and
yes,
music.
Exactly. And so I didn't want that to hinder a potentially talented student from learning more in-depth classical music.
Are these students then incorporated into the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra Youth Orchestra, or are those older students?
Well, we have students in the Presto program ranging from about 5 to on up to high school. Mm-hmm. So if they wanted, and some of them do, they do perform, they do participate in the youth orchestra as well. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them also participate in their school program. I really want to encourage that, that they are already showing an interest in it by committing themselves into being in their school music program. Mm-hmm. And this is just an added way to enrich that experience.
I recently had an interview with a professional musician who said he felt very conflicted about the academic teaching of music because he felt that the requirements of academia kind of push students into a particular mode and a particular form that didn't allow for creativity. He is a multi-performer in a lot of venues. So he plays the oboe, but he also performs with Cirque du Soleil. He's done a lot of other things. He tours with Quartetto Gelato. That's a great outlet. That group is a particularly good outlet for that kind of thing. But do you have any thoughts about the training of music kind of being restrictive?
I think that at the basic college level, which is the undergraduate level, it may feel restrictive to some students that they do have to take courses in theory and history and, you know, learn the canon of repertoire that their teachers recommend. But I think that in retrospect, the education is very valuable for them. And I know what they mean when someone says they think it's restrictive, but perhaps maybe they can join, you know, a new music ensemble or something to have an outlet for their creativity. But I think really I'm committed to giving students that foundation, mm-hmm. that classical foundation.
Well, to be fair, I think he is the rarity even amongst performing musicians, in that he has that kind of multifaceted career that's very rare. And I don't know that any particular teacher could teach to his particular group of gifts, you know, unless they were giving a completely individualized program to each student. So.
I mean, there are different schools that cater to different needs, you know, like mm-hmm. Berkeley is much more open to that kind of thing. And there's, you know, a university in Boston as well that is more geared towards jazz. Mm-hmm. But I think they're still giving the foundation, the classical foundation that I think is valuable.
Yeah, probably part, you can confirm, the part of the experience in teaching music and being part of an orchestra in a university is this learning the structure that's going to help support your future career as well.
Right. I think one of the frustrating things about being in an orchestra full-time is that you do realize how rigid it really is. It's much more rigid than any kind of undergraduate degree structure that you would come across. It's has a very set rules. And basically, my teacher used to always say, you have to be a machine to be in an orchestra.
And it's funny, he didn't say it in that way, but that's sort of what he said about playing in an orchestra. And he clearly doesn't like it very much either. And he's had this kind of blessed career where he's been able to play and do his other things as well. I think that the orchestral world is something that's very specific. And I find myself thinking, no matter how hard it is now, it can't be anywhere near as hard as, say, in Mozart's day, where you were on 24-hour call to the king and had to drop everything and go play when he wanted to have his dinner.
Yes, I guess that's why Mozart left the court.
Right. That's why he ended up getting kicked on the bottom on his way out.
Right.
So I guess as we wrap this up, I just want to ask you, do you have a particular favorite composer personally?
The other day I was thinking how lucky it was that we had the Bach solo sonatas and partitas, because, you know, they almost got thrown away. They were using it as paper to wrap up meat in. So I am now going through a Bach phase, and over Thanksgiving one of the things when we were talking about what we're thankful for is I said I was thankful to have that repertoire still in our lives and be able to work on them.
That's lovely. What's the piece that just fills your heart with joy that you just play for yourself? The days that you're in love with your instrument, not fighting with it, and when you're just enjoying it, what are the things that really fill your heart?
I would say, you know, one of the movements in the Bach solo sonatas from the C major sonata, one of the slow movements. And also, I love Beethoven. You know, the Spring Sonata, one of my favorites, and the Violin Concerto is just so beautiful.
Thank you so much, Sachi, for taking time out to come back again and talk with me more fully so that we can have this additional online conversation to add to our classical chat.
Well, thanks, Cara, for having me. Appreciate it.
And again, you can see and hear Sachi playing with the Salisbury Symphony Orchestra in their Christmas program Saturday, December 8th. since it's the end of the year, I should say 2012, we're approaching the turn of the year, at 7:30 p.m. If you want more information or to get tickets or more information about the program, you can go online to salisbury.edu/SSO or call 410-543-6271. Thanks again, Sachi.
Thank you, Carl.